Beth, good afternoon. How's the webcast going? It was kind of slow this morning. Okay, it's good. I was afraid I'd have to speak slower. All right. Don't have time for that. Get on. You probably saw my title in the bulletin today, Why the Synoptic Gospels? And you probably thought, that's a pretty dumb question. Synoptic Gospels being Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and without them, what would we do without them? You know, we would know so little about what Jesus taught about his life and his death. And I would agree, the Synoptics are fundamental. But you know, the indications are that they didn't exist until the 60s A.D. That's 30 years of the church. The church didn't have them. So why did they appear when they did? Well, over the last almost 2 years now, I've been covering the letters of the New Testament following a premise, my own opinion, that these letters were originally written to counter a major problem in Paul's churches. And against this heresy, Paul had to write letter after letter. And I've been addressing those letters chronologically, you know, trying to illustrate the development of this theory, or this heresy, I should say. It's my theory. It's their heresy. I began with the Corinthians in the mid-50s and Galatians and Romans a couple of years after that. And then recently I've been covering the prison epistles from the early 60s. And my premise has been that the historical context, I'm not talking about God's inspiration or his reason for writing them, but the historical context for why the author was writing the letter was to combat a heresy. And all these letters were written to the Greek churches, Paul's churches, churches of the Hellenized Roman Empire, the churches that were being troubled by a heresy. So then what about these synoptic gospels? Do they have any connection with that heresy? I can only kind of be brief and speculate a little bit today because not really much is known concretely about the time or the place or the occasion for the writing of the Synoptic Gospels. So I'm only going to hop briefly through my opinions on those topics. And of course, there are just a wealth of information. That's a huge topic, all three Gospels. I just want to make one point about them today, and that is that the contents of them seem to be chosen to solidify the true Gospel against the heresy that was being taught in the 60s A.D. So number one is to whom? Who were they written to? Well, the Synoptics were assembled for the Greek churches, the Greek-speaking churches. They were written in Greek. There's hardly any contention about that anywhere. They don't seem to be translations of any Hebrew or Aramaic earlier Gospels. For example, as in most of the New Testament, almost all the Old Testament scriptures that are quoted in the Synoptic Gospels are quoted from the Greek New Old Testament, the Septuagint, not the Hebrew. Now, I think there may indeed have been other Gospels before the Synoptic Gospels, and their clue to that is in Luke, one of the Synoptics, Luke 1, verse 1. The very first verse in Luke says, "Forasmuch as many have taken in hand to set forth in order a declaration of those things which are most surely believed among us." Many have taken in hand to do this. I'm entirely in agreement that there may have been earlier records written. But why his? Why then does Luke add his now, at this time when he wrote it? Also, a little note here while we're here on the subject of Luke's audience. In verse 3, he says, "It seemed good to me also, having had perfect understanding of all things from the very first, to write unto you in order, most excellent Theophilus." That's a kind of a question mark. Who's Theophilus? Nobody knows who Theophilus is. It might not, in fact, have been a person. Theophilus means beloved of God. Beloved of God. So it might be that Luke is simply addressing this and Acts to anybody who fits that description down through the ages, those who are beloved of God. Anyway, the early Judean church might well have collected many things in writing, but we can't prove it. I mean, there's no indication, there's no historical document of any Jerusalem gospel. Only the synoptics in the Gospel of John. All the details collected in those synoptic gospels, however, might have come from a common source. I could well believe that. Very believable that there were other records written before it. But the fact is that all that we have that is preserved from those records are Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And they're written in Greek, and they're probably written specifically for a Greek audience, namely Paul's churches. Number two, by whom? Who are these guys? Two of the three authors, and that's the major point here, two of the three authors are known to be very close to Paul. Hence the connection to Paul's churches. Two of the three. Mark. Mark is John Mark, you know, a nephew of Barnabas. Grew up in Jerusalem, apparently. Was there when James was killed and Peter was first imprisoned. And we know that he worked with Paul and Barnabas on their first trip. We also know that he was with Paul at the writing of his prison epistles in the 60s AD. My guess, and it's just a guess, is that Paul was the one who urged Mark to write the Gospel of Mark. Because of his background in Judea, because he had been a witness to so many things, and because of his knowledge of Greek. And then there's Luke, of course. Luke, without question, a close associate of Paul. He writes of his own travels. In the book of Acts, he writes of his own travels with Paul, starting at about 50 AD. He was with Paul right to the end, since he's mentioned in 2 Timothy. But little about him, little more than that is known about him. Actually, we don't even know for sure whether he was a Greek or a Hellenized Jew. But we know he was a careful historian. So it makes sense that Paul chose Luke, commissioned Luke to write a gospel account, and probably the book of Acts too. And Matthew. Well, Matthew seems to be the apostle Matthew, and I don't know of any connection between Matthew and Paul. But I would suspect that Matthew is probably a well-known chronicler of the events of Christ's ministry. And I guess it's my guess that Paul probably urged him. Because he was a well-known chronicler, he urged him to write a trusted, it would be trusted if Matthew wrote it, if he had that reputation, a trusted account of the life of Jesus Christ. And that would account why someone like Matthew would write, along with close associates of Paul, Luke and Mark. And why did he need three Gospels? I think the three Gospels are there to fulfill a very important biblical principle, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses shall every word be established. Number three, when were they written? This is hard to pin down. Speculations are all over the place as to the time of their being written, and I don't have time to ramble on all those opinions. But I want to take some hints strictly from what the Gospels themselves say. And one of the main things I want us to notice today are the chronological hints about the writing of Luke, or the writing of all the Gospels, in the Gospel of Luke. One hint is the connection between Luke and Acts in the very first verse of the book of Acts. The former treatise. What does he mean by the former treatise? Well, it seems to be his gospel. The gospel was volume 1, and the Acts is volume 2. So I take this as an indication that Luke and Acts were written very close together. Can't prove that. Seems logical to me that they're volume 1 and volume 2, they're written fairly close together. And we know that the book of Acts ends in about 63. Because the very last thing that Paul that is said by Luke is that Paul was imprisoned in Rome for 2 years, and that would have been from about 61 to 63. So that puts Acts somewhere around 63. How else would he know that he'd been there 2 years? And that would put Luke close to the early 60s as well. Now, if Luke's gospel is written in the early 60s, that indicates to me, not a proof again, but it indicates to me that Mark and Matthew were written at the same time. Why would that be? Well, because they are the synoptic gospels. They present the material in the same order, the same stories, the same view. That's what synoptic means. The selection of subject is so similar that they seem to be related. It doesn't seem to be that their similarity is a coincidence. They were assembled near the same time, and I think for the same reasons. And that time in the early 60s is right in the heat of the battle against the heresy in Paul's churches. I can't prove that, but this time setting would be an important clue to suggest that that was the reason for writing those three gospels. Which brings us to point four. Why? Why then? Why write the synoptic gospels? That's my main point today. Based upon the above assumptions, we have three things then in common among these gospels. They appear in the early 60s, around the time of the prison epistles, and written in Greek. They have at least two authors who are definitely closely associated with Paul, and they are preserved with the other letters to Paul's churches, which became the New Testament. I think up until this time in the early 60s, the churches of the Roman Empire had no written record at all of the life and teachings of Jesus Christ that we know of. And that was a problem. That was a big problem. The churches were falling victim to twistings and fables about who Christ was and what he taught. And so the synoptic gospels appear right in the middle of that problem. Both in time and in place, I would expect that their contents would be relevant, in some way relevant to that heresy. So are there any indications in the Gospels themselves that they were written to combat the heresy? And I suggest that there are. There are certain things that needed to be clarified to the churches of the Greek world. So that's my point five here. Things that needed to be clarified. And that we do find in the synoptic gospels. 5a, his birth as a flesh and blood human being. His birth. You know, the heresy of the time saw the Christ as a spirit, one that came down from the true God and spoke through some man. In other words, more or less possessed that man and spoke to him, spoke through him, that such light enlightenments had occurred before through other personages such as Seth and Melchizedek, and now through this man, Jesus. And against this is recorded in the Synoptic Gospels the fact that Christ was a man, not a visiting spirit. But consider, I'm not going to turn to all examples because there are a lot of them. It's three big books, I can't turn to them. But consider as you read the Gospels how much space is used, especially in the early chapters of Matthew and Luke, to record Jesus' lineage and his birth and his growing up from a child to a man. He was a flesh and blood man. 5b, his death as a sacrifice. Another thing that needed to be clarified. The heresy of the time denied that Christ, as a spirit, could die. Christ, in their view, was an enlightener, not a sacrifice. Again, much space is devoted in the Synoptic Gospels to establish that he was, in fact, a sacrifice. His own prophecies of his death and burial in the Gospels. His own predictions of his death and resurrection multiple times. The accounts of the last Passover. The importance of the body and the blood. The accounts of his prayer in Gethsemane, where he confesses that he must die because it is God's will that he must die. You know, and the chapter is full of the description of his crucifixion, his death, and his burial. All these establish the fact that he died as a sacrifice. And this was so important to the true gospel against the heretical speculations that were troubling Paul's churches. 5C, the nature of his resurrection. The heresy saw the salvation of man as a freeing of our immortal soul to return to its rightful place with the true God. That was their philosophy. Against this, the synoptic gospels pose the accounts of Jesus' resurrection. The nature of Jesus' resurrection had to be made clear because he is the precedent for the scriptural truth of the nature of the resurrection of all men to the resurrection of judgment. 5D, teaching of righteousness and obedience. Obedience. The heresy saw mankind as trapped here in the flesh. By who? By the Creator. Thus the Creator has trapped us, and his laws, therefore the laws of the Old Testament, keep us enslaved to that Creator. Against this, Jesus is shown in the Gospels to identify the Creator as good, and his laws are good. You know, how many times do the synoptics preach righteousness? Christ says, "Blessed are they which hunger and thirst after righteousness. Think not that I am come to destroy the law." He teaches the weightier matters of the law. He says to the Father in Gethsemane, "Not my will, but your will." Righteousness, obedience, as opposed to the heresy. And 5E, the Old Testament God as the true God. The Gospels endorse the Old Testament God as the true God. The heresy saw the God of the Old Testament at best as ignorant of the truth, and as, at worst, they saw him as maliciously suppressing the knowledge of who the true God is and who we really are. Against this, the Gospels teach the Old Testament as entirely true, and they uphold the goodness of the God who is known in the Old Testament. So consider as you read the Gospels how many times Jesus acknowledges the God of the Old Testament, how everything that he teaches establishes and builds upon, you know, the principles from that Old Testament. So the reader of the Gospels is left with no illusions that the Christ frees us from the Creator God. Nonsense. He is the fulfillment of that testament. I'm not saying, of course, that Matthew, Mark, and Luke are all about heresy. I know better than that. They're not all about heresy. Not at all. But I think the gospel accounts were chosen from many things that could have been recorded. John, at the last verse of his gospel, says that all the things that could have been recorded would fill all the books on earth. But what was chosen were those things that were needed. The context of the writing of these gospels is right in the middle of Paul's fight with the heresy in his churches. And I see the gospels as supportive of that fight. And I don't think that this is a coincidence. The people of Jewish dispersion, the people of the Hellenized Roman Empire, needed to know the truth about the things that were being distorted and twisted. And I think the synoptics were commissioned to fulfill that need.